Blog Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is, mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this. Somebody shoots.
How to become the next world leaders, brave hearts, revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, book one, strategy, tactics, techniques, look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them, gotta you show me if necessary, homie, vestige is very real, if enemies carrying heavy steel, beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time, when Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind, the beauty of life, was when my mom said, again, you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my D&P right, Jesus, what is he like, I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him, practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining, test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up, the armies of school, teaching smart ways to go, I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool, got me thinking out loud, sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out, revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here,
my revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build, with dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick's Hill, for fish scales the cops, the time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus, up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas, black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa, 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to appellate division, I did it strong for 7 long years in prison, of the system, I'm like a modern day Hitler, black gorilla, crib and blood in one only, just know my face, I be the case, but the wish at the police, nugget the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution, 21 gun salute, the new Huey
Newton. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers, protect the children, grab revolvers, the woman plays an important part of our life force, of what we fight for, my heart goes to you beautiful wife in war,
and listen more and talk less, watch all and trust none, demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in, and ride all the time, not just when convenient,
justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding, we the lost children of Israel in this western world region, you ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in,
strong rule the weak but the wise rule is strong, it's more to a war than just getting it on, seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared, I don't care, no one's spared, and
revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here, revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Jackson.
Sorry about your brother.
He will live to regret it. I'll see to that. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Good evening. Free the land. Revolutionary greetings. Welcome to another edition of George University Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakur, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transfer the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Whereas our fourth goal to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. And our fifth goal, prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. And our overall goal, transferring the whole pre-industrial slave complex with the prison institutions to the bigger institutional learning through educational means. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events that happened in history during this week. October 16th, Attorney Abraham Lincoln, representing a slave owner, asked the court in Charles, Illinois, sent a black mother and her four children back to slavery. The court rejected his request and freed slaves from servitude, whatever, from henceforth and forever. In 1849, Judge Washington Williams, the first major black historian born in Bedford Springs, Pennsylvania. In 1855, from the 16th through the 19th, more than 100 delegates from six states held a black convention in Philadelphia. In 1859, from the 16th through the 17th, John Brown attacked United States Arsenal at Harper's Ferry, Virginia, with 13 white and 5 new Africans. The new Africans were Shields Green, Dangerfield Newby, Sherrod Lewis Leary, Osborne P. Anderson, and John A. Copeland. Two of the 5 new Africans were killed, 2 were captured, and 1 escaped. 1876, a race riot occurred in Camp Hart, South Carolina. 5 whites and 1 black were killed. In October 16, 1968, Thomas Smith and John Carlos at Olympic raised their black little fist to signify power unity and to protest racism and economic oppression during the Olympics. Also, in 1995, the Mean Man March took place in YDC where over 2 million men gathered for a day in atonement unity. Also, in 2011, Martin Luther King Jr. National Memorial officially dedicated in Washington, D.C., October 17, 1787. Boston Blacks, led by Prince Hall, which were the final of one turn another, Prince Hall Mason, or the Black Freemasons, petition legislated for equal school facilities. In 1817, Samuel Ringgold Ward, minister, abolitionist, author, was born in Eastern Shore, Maryland. From 1888, Capital Spring Bank of Washington, D.C., the first black bank opened in Washington, D.C. The savings banks of the Order of True Reformers in Richmond, Virginia, were chartered on March 2, 1888. In 1990, the Civil Rights Act of 1990 was passed. October 18, 1969, L.A. Black Panther Party member Walter Terry Pope was murdered by the pigs. 1989, U.S. Census Bureau said the poverty rate for new Africans in 1988 was 31.6% compared to 2.1% for whites and 26.8% for Hispanics. Well, today, it is October 19th, 1865. Major General O.O. Howard, head of the Freedmen Bureau, told a Freedmen mass meeting at Destin, South Carolina, that the government had decided to return confiscated land to planters. In South Carolina, Virginia, and other southern states, freedmen organized militarily and resisted attempts to repossess the land. In 1983, Conrad Gaddafi Abdul Secure, a GDU, Black Organized Committee, was born, also a kind of African citizen. In 1983, Maury Bishop, Unison Whiteman, Jackie Kreff, and other leaders murdered in Grenadian coup. Also on the day in 1986, Samora Machel, Prime Minister of Mozambique, is killed mysteriously in a plane crash in South Africa. Also on this date, Mama Shoshana Shakir was born. Mama Shoshana Shakir is a country African citizen out of Detroit area. She's the sister of Choka Lumumba, and she's been over acting in the movement for decades. Today is her born as well. 1898, North Carolina Mutual and Property Insurance Company founded by John Merritt and Associates in Durham, North Carolina. In 1891, Jomo Kenyatta was born. He was leader of the Mau Mau Liberation Forces and president of Kenya when they got the independence. In 1942, 60 leading Southern blacks issued the Durham Manifesto, calling for fundamental change in race relations after a Durham, North Carolina meeting. In 1981, in Nyack, New York, the Brinks robbery by Black Liberation Army and Allied Anti-Imperialists took place. September 1st, 1837, U.S. forces violated flag of truce and arrested Seminole Chief Oscar Leo, who led a mixed Indian-Black force and who was close identified with the struggle of runaway slaves. He died in prison on January 3rd, 1838. In 1932, started the Tuskegee Syphilis experiment, in which hundreds of black men were left untreated for 40 years by government researchers. In 1936, Jesse Owens, who was an athlete, won 4 gold medals at the Berlin Olympics, and the Germans hated it. In 1991, Federal Reserve Board reported said black Americans were twice as likely to be turned down for mortgage as whites in the same income group. That was in 1991. That's 2022 now. Pete Gang. Okay, October 22nd, 1906, 3,000 black demonstrating ride in Philadelphia to protest an anti-black theatrical presentation of Thomas Dixon, the Klansman. In 1963, some 225,000 students boycotted Chicago schools on Freedom Day protests of de facto segregation. Also, October 22nd, National Day Against Police Brutality. That should be every day, you know, especially in our community and new African people. A couple of events that happened in history during this week, you know, but, you know, of course, there's plenty more. Those are just a couple of them. You know, I like to say free land, all identified land, revolutionary greetings, free all our political prisoners, free all the captive African citizens, free all the new political prisoners, new POWs. I want to thank everybody who found that broadcast in 2014. I want to salute everybody who currently educating themselves and being a positive change, not only their life, but other people's lives, and currently doing something positive within their own selves and their own community, you know, and also the ones who are not giving up. And also I'm going to salute all the comrades that are behind enemy lines, have been holding the line for decades by writing books, design, pamphlets, starting study groups, sharing information to people on the outside so we continue our movement and being an overall spirit of inspiration. You know, I like to salute Mama Sasha Kirbistine being liberated after all these decades and still being a symbol of hope and inspiration and a symbol of resistance for all new African people all over the globe and the world. You know, and tonight we're going to be talking with the Peace Party for Independence, you know, some close comrades of mine out of the John John McCloud District. You know, I'm about to open your lines so we can get into the dialogue. Okay, free land, comrades. Are y'all present?
Free land, peace, jumbo. Yes, sir, I'm present.
Yes, sir, peace, yes, sir. Vitamin necessary. Peace. Okay. Yeah, but, you know, before we get into that, man, tell the people a little about yourself before we get into this meter thing, man, what we talking about, man, you know. Tell the people about yourself, you know. Yeah, tell them about yourself, you know. Before we get into this, man, so people can know who I'm talking to and what's going on.
Okay, comrade, tied with the theory. I'm part of the Peace Party for Independence. We're a community political organization. We'll be bending down here in our hometown of Columbus, Georgia. We got a lot of different things going on, so that's me.
Okay.
And,
okay, go ahead.
I'm Rosé Cabalon, like Conrad said, with the People's Party for Independence in Columbus, Georgia, on the Minister of Defense. So it's a perspective I've been coming with most of the time. But as far as our organization, we're dabbling in politics, starting with the community development. So I know we're going to touch into that. So.
True indeed. You know, but before we get into this, man, you know, understand that y'all both have African names, right? You know what I'm saying? What do these names mean, you know what I'm saying, to you? So what do these names mean for the people who don't know? And what significance is it with having an African name? Just for the people who don't know, just the people who listen and don't know. You know, go ahead.
Okay. Right. Y'all go ahead, Kaylon.
Okay. Well, so the first step that we use to take, whether it's from the individual standpoint or the organization, is rebranding ourselves. And some of our names don't reflect who we really are. Some of our names do already reflect that. But either way, we chose a name. And even as an organization, we have a last name. And we have a cable line, so that's why I'm resident cable line. And a cable line, from our studies, from what we can find, is the most original name that we call the landmass of Africa. So from my journey and getting my name starting out, I kind of deleted everything from spirituality to just the knowledge they were teaching me to just everyday reality. And when I started doing my own research, and in doing my own research, I found a cable line. And that's what I wanted to do, find the most original name for whatever I could attach myself to. And at the time, it was just the continent of Africa. So that's what we adopted as our names, a cable line. And so every comrade that comes through, after they go through the six-week program, at the end of the program, it's mandatory to have an African name that's chosen. It should be personal, which is why they go through the six-week program, why they are being debriefed and rebriefed. They're able to get into the mind state, rethinking like an African, and they choose their name based on that. And that's what the whole program is about, rebranding our minds, you know, changing our old mentalities into revolutionary mentalities. So that's where the name comes from. That's why we make everybody change their name.
Okay. And I'm a Tadra Desiri. And studying different cultures, I realized that in order to understand the culture, you had to understand the language. And many New Africans only speak one language. So I wanted to look into different languages, so I started looking into Swahili and seeing that a lot of different African countries speak Swahili. And I got my name from studying the literature of the language, and it means he should be named a brave person. I was talking with one of my comrades one day, and he told me that I was brave. And then he asked me, when I do some, do I be scared? And before I could answer, he said, I know you'd be scared, because the only way you can have courage or be brave is to be scared and still do it. And I was like, wow, you know, I didn't think about it like that. But when I approached him with it, you know, he kind of brought it all together for me. And in that, I know that from a tribal standpoint, we come from a group of warriors, a group of brave people. A group of people that went through something that they weren't necessarily comfortable with, but still had to do it anyway. And that's what we're doing in the rebuilding of our communities throughout the Republic. That's what we're doing as a nation, and rebuilding the Republic of New Africa. And that's what we have to do individually. So when you come in with a European English or Italian or whatever type of name, we want you to reconnect to Pan-Africanism and reconnect to your roots. And be able to name yourself. Dr. John Henry Clark said, once you get free, you name yourself. So once you go through the program and have a thorough knowledge of who you are and where you want to go, you name yourself to identify with who you are now.
True indeed. You know, my next question is, when you hear the word, you hear the term comrade, what did that actually mean to you? When you hear the term comrade, what does that actually mean? What does it signify when you hear that term?
On my end, comrades make a commitment to each other. Emil Kafka Brawl said in one of his books that you could be my brother or my sister by accident. I didn't choose for you to be my brother or sister. But we have made a commitment to each other and to what we have our cause to be. And that's what a comrade is, someone who makes a commitment to a cause and to an individual that they'll never falter by their side, that they'll always be there in dark times, you know, that we'll always strive for greatness. So comrades come together sometimes by choice, a lot of times by force, and, you know, we come together and we do what we need to do for ourselves and for our future generations, just in my point of view.
Okay.
Well, I don't want to sound too redundant in it, you know, but, yeah, that's Comrade pretty much put it, you know, I don't want to say the same things, but, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. That's understood, man. You know, y'all had these titles like the chairman and minister of defense, right? What do the titles actually signify when it comes to doing the nation building? What did it signify to you as an individual? What did both the titles identify to you as individually, as an individual person? And what did it identify with? What does the term actually mean to you when you hit the term? I'm chairman, minister of defense. I'm chairman. I'm such. What do those titles really mean when it comes to nation building? From your own perspective and experience.
Okay. Let me take it since I ain't confirming all right. So like with the comrade question, once we can come together under a struggle, a movement, a situation, call ourselves comrade. It's time from then, once you start, time to start doing the work, it's time to start delegating duties, you know, from what's required within the organization, you know, build the sales up. And then building up the sales, you know, everybody has their different duties, their different functions. People are in certain positions because they have certain strengths, you know, and like the chairman, the comrade always speaks it so beautifully. And I can remember when we were starting the organization, you know, we were doing all our studies. We went to a few other organizations and came back. And, you know, we decided to just attack the community. And we read about how Huey then flipped the coin to decide who was going to be Minister of Defense and the chairman. So right before comrade was about to flip the coin, I stopped him. You know, and I was like, Conrad, you the chairman, and on the MOD. And not to go into our personal stories, but Conrad articulates it well, and I have a way of training the self-mind soldiers to protect the people that speak. And that's basically the foundation of, you know, what we do. Taking our, and that's what it means to us. It's our comrades' duties and our jobs. You know, he articulates it, and in essence, I protect him so he can just speak it. You know, and just having that duty, breaking the work down into duties like that makes it easy on everybody so everybody can do what they do, and the cell works the way it needs to work so the body can move. And that's what all of the titles mean. And there's no big I's and little U's. They're positions. And as long as you take your position serious, and all the comrades you have these titles, they do. Everything will work out. So it's made like that. That's what it means to me, though.
And also on that, we realize that we are being attacked, and we understood that we were at war, so to speak, right? And
yeah,
we were, that politics is war without bloodshed, and the two positions that we play is a chairman is speaking, which is setting up the board to be able to move, and the minister of defense is actually having people in place to protect us. Through our study, we realized that you can talk. We've had a lot of great speakers, or a lot of great orators. However, we haven't had a great way of protecting them. Comrade George Jackson said, our leaders die so easily. It's so easy to kill us. So, yes, even if you got somebody talking, you have to have somebody protecting them and the whole organization itself. So we want to make sure we can solidify those two positions so that we can build everything else, like the Conrad said, every other position, to put us in position to be effective.
True indeed, man. Let's switch the board for a moment, man. We talk about community development, community organizing, right? But first, what is a community? What exactly is a community? You know, and how do you structure that community? You know, like how you go into the community, what you do when you get into community? You know, what do you do? But the first thing, what is a community?
A community, if in real terms, is made up of two words, common unity, right? And a lot of times when people have common unity, it's a common culture behind that. And inside of that culture, you have ways of expressing yourself. And ways of expressing yourself can become political. That's the politics. And the politics is how you express yourself to the rest of the world. So when we go into a community, we examine the culture, and then we get a representative from that community to express the politics to us to let us know the program and how they're already living. Now, once we get there, we don't come to them with a program. We come to them with an ideology. And a lot of times our people they have a criminal mentality because we have to survive on such a lower scale that criminal activity is conducive to the lifestyle that we have. So what we have to do is go in, introduce a revolutionary mentality, introduce the people to the principles of the organization, which is deep sea, defense, economics, education, politics, and culture. And once we introduce these principles to the community, we organize the people who's already there around issues that they already have. And we create a coordinated committee. A coordinated committee is like a neighborhood watch, but for the people, by the people. People that really live in the community and have stake inside of the community and want to see it grow, want to see it better. And most times, people who occupy a community is of one culture, one race, one ethnicity, a lot of times. So if you go into a new African community, their community is going to be 98% New African, 100% New African. If you go into a Jewish community, it's going to be 100% Jewish, 98% Jewish, whatever have you. So we want to make sure when we go into our communities that that we have institutions in place to where people inside of the community don't have to go outside of the community for so much assistance. So inside of each community, we think and believe that you should have a school, a bank, a hospital, a grocery store, and a community center. If you have these five institutions inside of any community, the community will be able to function at a certain level to where we can provide resources We can provide outlets. We can provide ways of bettering the community so that everybody will have an opportunity to do better. Right now we're in a crab in a barrel mentality, but like Jay-Z said, who put the crabs in the barrel? You know, that's not his natural habitat. So we have to get back to doing things naturally, because what we've been introduced to is something that is foreign to how we really are as a people. So we have to embrace who we are, what we do, and then introduce that back to the world. And I think we'll be accepted then once we change our position and condition in society and be able to defend ourselves as a people to where we're not just being ran over. You know, everyone does set up businesses and does contracts with us because we're not able or showing the world that we can do it for ourselves. We're just putting ourselves in position to own, operate, and control the community again.
True indeed.
And so just to piggyback off Conrad with the community, so when you said community, the first person I thought of was Dr. Claude Anderson, when he talked about what do we have right now. And right now we have neighborhoods where it's a bunch of people live there, but there's really no structure. And all the money leaves at the end of the day. He said it got so bad because of the crime, because we don't have a community, that all we got is a hood now. Where, you know, it's just people come in, they leave, it's a big rent factory, basically. So even what we asked was, you know, what the solution, or like you asked, what is a community? And Dr. Claude Anderson said community is where it consists of an economic base. Three things: an economic base, a code of conduct, and a body politic. Now, before we had ran across this, you know, we naturally were putting things together. And what we realized is that we had a body politic, you know, and what, you know, in the sense of owning and controlling and moving the people in the community. Next, we need a code of conduct, right? Because we have to know how to do business with each other, how not to just destroy each other. And the economic base, which we underestimated how much you need an economic base. And going back through the study, if we had to listen, he said that first, actually, you know, because you can't make any moves as a people, as an individual, you can't make any moves if you don't have a base for economics. So as a community, you know, and that's why we're comrades saying, you know, putting up the grocery store, putting up the community center, putting up a bank. You know, these are the institutions that can sustain us as a people, you know, and having a base, you know, PPI being the body politic, and us having the code of conduct with the other organizations, with our people, with ourselves, you know, to go into the community and build these things. And like Conrad was saying about with the, once we get in there, we build coordinating committees. And not to be too redundant, but the coordinated committees, they are the individual, I mean, not the individual, they are the organization inside of the community. So those same titles, similar titles that we have for ourselves, the similar duties and responsibilities that we have for ourselves, members of the same community, members of communities, they sign up for these, and they actually do these things. It's just more about us going in and doing the work behind it. And understanding, which was a good question, what is a community and what it takes to go and do it?
True indeed. You know, you previously mentioned that, you got to protect the leaders and protect the aspects of what we're building, right? So how Asher does the emergency preparedness, How did it relate to community building? You know, so how did it relate to nation building? How did it relate to community development? How did it relate to that, if it even relate, you know, from your perspective?
So the emergency preparedness, which Yearly, we do a emergency preparedness seminar, and every year we add on and we get a little bigger. And what this came from was me having a duty and a responsibility as a Minister of Defense. And when we came up with, you know, the duties of, you know, our cadres, my duty is to educate our people in self-defense, to train the sense of purpose, pride, and loyalty to themselves, the community, and the nation. And a part of the self-defense is defending yourselves against, we don't have to get to anything extreme yet, which we definitely have no cases, but our people can't defend ourselves against, you know, just basic things. You know, if your power goes out, or understanding how much food to have in your house, you know, or understanding how to find water in different places, you know, if you live in that type of environment, or learning to go ahead and have a certain amount of water already in place. So the emergency preparedness, which goes along with the coordinated committee, because inside of that coordinated committee, we want to have an emergency response networking team. We understand, and this is a good example, we understand that there's only so much we should depend on somebody else to do for us. Some things, because we're not at a certain stage, you have to be able to, you have to use certain avenues. For example, getting injured, or in the actual case, somebody got shot in a community that we were in once, and the brother was bleeding, you know, so, you know, me going through the course, which, you know, we got a comrade who's a registered nurse, so, you know, he's taught us things, went over things, trained us to know certain things, and, you know, we knew to go in and stop the bleeding first. You still have to call the 911, but what it made us realize is you have to be able to train the common people to deal with a lot of these situations, you know, because and a lot of us have personal situations where people have suffered because, you know, lack of knowledge. And that's not going to – it's the age of information. And we have a whole pamphlet on now, you know. Now we know. Now we know so much today that it's not an excuse not to do our part. And a part of doing our part is what we can do before the bigger help can arrive. So with any type of first aid, any type of emergency preparedness, all the comrades have to go through a CPR and be certified. And we got a comrade that's certified already. You know, these are just things that actually save lives. We inside our seminar, we have a section where we go over fire safety, you know, going over smoke detectors versus fire detectors, you know, fire extinguishers, the six different types of fire extinguishers. People just don't know. And a lot of our people suffer. So me having my title, which is my duties and responsibilities as a Minister of Defense, you know, I put these things in place, these programs, to not just teach myself. The objective is to teach the comrades in the organization along with the people inside the community and create a whole networking system throughout our city first. So that's what Emergency Prepare is about. It's about preparing us for emergencies, and it actually goes emergencies/disasters. It's not just emergencies. And I'm going to wrap this up. And I watched a documentary on Hurricane Katrina, and I seen, you know, how people just have to deal, not having a way, not being prepared, you know, and there's a lot of different levels of how, you know, however that happened there. But the main thing I seen was they had to depend on FEMA to get things done. You know, to a degree we still do that. We rely on our government to get things done. And we have to start relying on ourselves. And if we can do that on just the smallest level, learn how to change the tide, keeping your gas tank a certain amount, keeping a certain amount of water and food in your house in case things happen. These things are actually happening. Before coronavirus hit, we was having the emergency preparedness seminar telling everybody about all of this. And it actually did happen. We actually hit a spot where food got scarce. Right now, food is high. Everything is higher right now. You know, so all that stuff comes in handy. Reality is how we know it works, or is how we know it's important. I'm done, bro.
True indeed, man. You know, that's a beautiful expression of things. You know, you mentioned some interesting things, man, especially in regard to, you mentioned the term cadre, right? You mentioned the term cadre. You know, what exactly is a cadre, and how do you develop cadre? That's for either one of y'all to ask. Either one of y'all respond. It doesn't matter how many y'all want to.
Okay. Well, okay. Like Conrad said, oh, go ahead, Conrad. Go ahead.
Hey, K-Bron.
I would say, you know to jump in. I get long when you stop me. So a cadre, like Conrad explained, the comrades, the group of people who consciously come together. And the comrades coming together, you create cadres. The individual is a cadre. The individual should be able to do all five pillars and understand all of them, rebuild the whole organization. That's how it's designed, each member. Just to take it from the individual concept of being a cadre to put us in a whole organization, we are cadre. You know, with our mission statement being to politically strengthen the African community in America, doing for self economically, and so forth and so on. That's a cadre. You know, just for our people, we're a cadre. Our people are cadre, but we're going to that. So within the organization, we're a cadre. In our organization, like we said, we broke down to these titles, but within more cadres, right, five of them, defense, education, economic, politics, culture. We break it down into five cadres. The whole organization is a cadre. We break it down into five cadres. We already built cadres like this, but I'm breaking it down, I'm going down. So the comrades, the organization cadre, we broke down the five cadres. The five cadres have a mission, like we went over. Minister of Defense, you know, I have people in my cadre. It can't just be me that protect. I need help. So you train people to do the same things you just trained yourself to do from your training. That's why we had a 6-week program. Each comrade is trained to a degree to be in the cadre, in the organization. Once you leave, after you graduate from your interest program, you have to go through another program within your cadre so you can be briefed into your cadre because they have an individual mission. All of this is lined up just like the universe, the stars, the body, the cells, keep reproducing. So it won't matter what happens at all, success or resistance. You build individual cadres, which create cadres. Within the cadre. So I hope I explained, I'm going to let Conrad come in on what is a cadre and how we go about building cadres.
You did a good job in explaining it. What I would say is, like you said, in the end, building a cadre is like a cell. You know, and in order to develop a cadre, you have to have a common ideology. In order to develop anything, you have to have a common ideology. In order for a basketball team to win a championship, everybody has to be championship minded. Or you won't win. So in order to develop your cadre, everybody has to study. Everybody has to be thinking in the line with not saying everybody has to be robotic, because Che Guevara said that the most beautiful thing that we have as an advantage is our imagination. Our imagination is what's going to carry us to the promised land. However, we have to have an ideology of Pan-Africanism, new African nationalism, that shows that we want to take care of ourselves first, and then we'll be able to help other people. But what we have been doing, instead of building that cadre, has been taking the best people from each cadre and let them go on to work with other races to
unfair hands what other races have going on. What we want to do is get the best of the best of our people, put them inside of one of those cadres, and then develop it. Get everybody on the same thinking pattern. Get everybody on the same wavelength so that we can say, hey, we're going to build our country. We're going to build our community. We're going to build our neighborhood. We're going to build ourselves to be a Pan-African, New African, and have something that our children can be proud of. Free the land.
God, I mean, that's, you know, throughout the conversation, I heard the term mentioned New African, right? What exactly is a New African, and why is it, why is it so important to build a New African nation or build a regional from New Africa?
So a New African is from America, whether you're born in America or travel, like we say, whether you are here by force or by choice, you know, you're here, and we are New Africans here. We have a beautiful history, and we want to connect our history to where we know we're from. We know that we are African people, but we can't just say where we're from. We can't say we're Bantu. We can't say we're Nigerian. You know, we can't say we come from a certain tribe or a particular area. We do know that we come from that continent, and we do know that we are here, and we have been made into a new people. Marcus Garvey used to always say, the new black man, he said Negro. The new Negro is not going to stand for this. The new Negro has moved into a new place. A new Negro is going to achieve high places in government. And what he was saying was, we are the same African people with that same blood, but they erased our history. They erased our knowledge of God, of our God. They erased our culture. They tried to split us up, and we became a new African people. And in being that, we never, Dr. John Henry Clark said, white people never gave us, or America actually never gave us a chance of saying who we are. They told us who we are. And anytime we told them who we were, they rejected it. So we no longer want to be coined by the term black, Negro, nigger. We're calling ourselves New Africans, and we want to occupy the land mass or the land space of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. Historically, that's where our people have been for the last 400 years, and even the people who left and went north or east or west, their roots are from those five states. We want to occupy the land in which we already have, but we have to implement a government, you know. So we do have the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa. It's a lot of things that we have going on. I don't want to get too far. You just told me to explain what a New African is. So whether you're here by choice or by force, we in America identify as New Africans, and we are a New African people, and it's time for us to be New African nationalists and put it on a global stage, on a national stage, so we can have a government of our own and be respected as a nation in the world.
Indeed. I just want to come from Conrad already put it so beautifully, so I ain't gonna go too long. I just want to go from a slightly different point with the New African people. Like Conrad said, we know our history resides in Africa. We understand that. But where we are today geographically, what happened to us as a people, you know, how we're developing into what we're supposed to develop into, you know, individually and a nation. It's literally created a new people, you know, a new type of thinking people, a new type of people of finding a spirituality, a new type of people learning how to deal with each other, how to deal with their enemies, how to be around them, their enemies, literally, you know. So I always come from the point to our people of respecting and honoring that we are a new African people, literally, you know, and let's make that history. That's all I got, Conrad.
I want to ask on the regards that, you know, for the minister of defense perspective and also the perspective of the warrior culture in regards to Ogun and the Balaguns, other aspects, right? How do those cultures or ideas or mentalities or attributes relate to building a new Africa? You know, how do they relate to that? Or even do they relate at all from your own perspective?
So, and like you said, the warriors. So, in finding this new, like I said at the beginning, through, I'm going to get a little personal. I went through this stage of deletion. I got angry and I deleted everything. And what I deleted also was, you know, my connection to, you know, my real spirituality. And any warrior know you're not a warrior unless you have a real spiritual aspect of what you're doing, a moral code, right? That's what makes you the warrior. And as far as Ifi and Orishas, and you mentioned Ogun, which is a warrior Orisha, through our studies, I was looking for as close as I can get to original practices, you know. And this originally came from us studying the Haitian Revolution. And when I studied the Haitian Revolution, which we made a part of our C-suite program, we actually teach about it. In the Haitian Revolution, not to get too far into it, they had a voodoo ceremony. So I can remember reading about this, and I was like, you know, what exactly was going on? You know, what exactly happened? Because, you know, they go through this stage of, you know, independence, you know, literally, because of this. And I was like, how? And I was like, we've lost that to a degree. So I go through my studies and I start finding these Orishas and Ifi, and actually it was my fiance who brought that aspect of spirituality around, because I kind of deleted everything. I knew as a creator, but I wasn't connected to anything like that. So, and this is for any new African people who looking for some type of spirituality or some type of practice to do besides the traditional, which, you know, if you do anything the right way, any tradition, you know, whatever helps them do it. But as far as new African, the new way, originality, or finding the most original ways, it was this. And when you study these Orishas, they correspond to all the rest of the religions, were. But there are certain aspects about them that we as a people we have in us already. But we don't recognize them, and we don't recognize that it's all around us, right? But so not to go too deep into, you know, all the Orishas and all of that, but it's a spiritual system that has, and anybody know us, especially our ancient people, it has, you know, we study the forces of nature and the self. And there are pieces of ourselves that we need to ignite, bring back up to use today, you know. In studying them, if you go into them, you ask about warriors specifically. Ogun is a warrior Orisha. Ososhi is a warrior Orisha. Alegba is a warrior Orisha. Who's a world opener. You know, so it's different ones, different personality aspects. And so I think it's important for our people to, some form of fashion, tap or dial back into some of this stuff, because once you start seeing it, it just starts connecting, and that's why I stayed with it for so long now, because it was something that I didn't have to research or it naturally just started to come to me. Did I ask some questions, brother?
Yeah. You asked my question, man. You know, everything, you know, if we start looking at the same thing, man, from the perspective of the work we're doing in the community development, community organizing, nation building, you know, it's going to be a lot of what we're going to turn comparative study, right? And like we know from a theological perspective, that a lot of theologians and spiritual and religious scholars, they do comparative religious study, right, in regard to what's compatible, like they might compare, you know what I'm saying, the African powers of the Orishas to the powers of the people of Kemet, to the powers of India, and so forth and so on, right? So we start looking at revolution and development, resistance development. We start comparing certain things in regards to, like, for instance, by you being a member of defense, we understand they've been very members of defense for different organizations, formation, different aspects. They have been members of defense in the prison of government, members of defense in the Black Panther Party, members of defense in other formations that have been created throughout time, right? So those are just starting points and a place for us, and origin points for us to dissect information, to look at the mistakes, look at the accomplishments, look at the achievements, and apply those things to our concrete conditions right now what we're facing, because the conditions at those times were different than what we're facing right now. So we got to apply those concrete conditions from a scientific perspective and see what we develop to and how we can utilize those points right now to make a better situation for ourselves, our family, with our community, and better with our nation. So everything makes sense in regard to what y'all saying, right? You know, it's a beautiful thing, man. You know, it's a beautiful thing, like you're saying. You know, for instance, you know, we would look at everything, you know, our national territory, division of government, and right now we are situated right now in Dr. John Clark Town. And those who are not aware, I'm actually administering information for the PPI as well, you know, as well as the Prison of Appropriate Africa. You know, and like some of the things we talk about in regards to the work we're doing, right, you know, we first I understand that, first off, you got to understand that, you know, that the first person to look at you down on you are your family member, because they don't understand your perspective, where you're coming from. They're going to look at you different, like, what are you talking about, revolution, and Black power, and freeing the land, what all that mean? You know, I'm not with all that, you know. Then you got to consider, you know what I'm saying, your friend, then you consider, you got to consider that the work you're doing is considered to be anti-American, considered to be radical, considered to be a crime. It considers a crime for one to be from the BLI community, whereas, like you mentioned earlier, the Jewish BLI community, the Chinese, and the French, and the Italian BLI community. But soon we start being a community of African people, we're a threat, we're a problem, we're criminals, we're gangsters. And just like, for instance, y'all talked about defense in regards to protecting this and everything. The defense is also be able to take your policy, be able to take your ideology. Like when somebody asks you something, you got to have some kind of defense toward what they're talking about in regards to defense. I defend your ideology, so how strong your ideology is, so the strength of it. So in regards to saying that, I'm looking at Black Wall Street, all these things that we're talking about, from the bank, the hospital, community center, schools, and all that. But what they did have for real was a strong military faith, because they wasn't really concerned about it, so to speak. But they had people there that had been trained from a military standpoint, but they didn't have an active army, so to speak. So when the attack occurred, they had people that automatically went into position to do certain things, but it wasn't what they were preparing for. If they'd been preparing for it earlier, it would have been more successful. Then you look at things like the late answer just said, Dr. Late after, you said, wherever you build, it got to be bipolar. And he said, if you build a store, you got to have an army. You build a barbershop, you have an army. You know, so wherever you build, you got to have an army to defend and protect it, right? You know what I'm saying? Which makes sense. So we've been in attack here since 1690. We've been in attack. We've also been in resistance. And our resistance has showed us different things. That 400 years of prison has showed different things, that we either use our more sign, we use our parent avenue, we use being new after, we use about being Black Commons, Black Marxists, we use about the prayer, we use a lot of different things, we use about being corrupt blood, GD5, we use a lot of different things to prepare our imagery, our identity, our name, our culture, our concept. Then we bought into it, like Ralph Ellison said in 1950, he wrote a book, Invisible Man. He said that we don't have no purpose, no place, no image, no idea, no concept. We just invisible to society. So in order to be seen in society, we got to show and prove to our people, and we got to show and prove to them, because our people our people are on the aspect of believing what their oppressor said. Whatever their oppressor said is fact. But as soon as we say something, it's considered to be a crime. It's considered to be you're trying to game me, and trying to deceive me, you're trying to, whatever it may be. You know, so we got to show and prove to our people. So even by building a community center, building a store, building a grocery store, you know what I'm saying, being forming a military, or training people, things, that's showing and proving to our people that we're actually here. We actually here, and we actually give them the time to be in touch. You can go to the community and touch it, taste it, feel it, smell it. You can go into a garden or a farm and actually see the food. You know what I'm saying? You can actually touch things that can help you, aid and assist you. You know, so it's just a very profound, deep thing. We're looking at things from our perspective, man, in regards to what we're doing and what the passion is, right? And I want to ask another question in regards to what are some of the people in history that inspired you or motivated you to do the work that you do? Y'all take time to say that. And why you say individual? Why you choose the individual? Go ahead.
I'll say Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Chairman Fred, Emil Cabral, and Dr. John Henry Clark, and Brother Conrad George Jackson. And I wanted to just say five, but those six stood out to me as far as Marcus Garvey really put resources toward building a nation. He asked some real profound questions. What a black man army? What a black man nation? What a black man government? What a black man flag? These questions can still be answered today. I mean, asked today as far as where is that? And then once we present it, it's like, now what do you do with it? You know, how do you make it function? How do you bring it into existence? How do you get other people to respect it? You know, and that's why I look at Malcolm, because Malcolm really was going around the world making people respect the new African nation. He was very political with what he was saying, and people started to really look at us in a different light. And when I got into organizing, I was a young brother. I was like 22, 23. And Chairman Fred caught my eye because he was a young brother. And he was speaking really for the people. And he was so serious about it that they killed the young brother. And I want to make sure that I'm as serious, you know, to that degree. And Dr. John Henry Clark was, he asked some profound questions. It was like I was in every religion, and I started looking for myself. I couldn't find it in no history book, no religion book, no nothing. He said, so I really started traveling, and I really started looking for where my people at, and I found them. And then I started teaching my people about, hey, this is our true history. This is where we come from. This is what we were doing. This is how we should be acting. And I was like, wow, you know, that's nice to me. And Brother Conrad George, he was locked up. But the brother had such a beautiful way of speaking, a beautiful way of presenting our argument. Brother said he met Lenin. He met Mao. I asked one of my Conrad, I said, Conrad, he was in prison. How he met him? You know, and Conrad was like, he was reading the literature so much, he felt like he was meeting him. He said, I wrestled with him. I wrestled with the information that they had. But I mean, he was going back and forth in his mind, seeing if it made sense, you know, for us. And that's how, with all that combination, I want to be able to do that for our people as well. I want to be able to take all that and really think about it and really put us in the position to win, put us in the position to compete. We already got all the pieces. Now we just got to bring it together and direct it. And so those are a couple people that really motivated and inspired me.
Conrad named the whole roster now. he the name I was Big 12. but it's a I'm going to come from, like you said, I ain't going to take it just for Minister of Defense. Just that. Because there was a long line of just influence, you know, just from studying, you know, going all the way back, you know, to, I think the first person I ever heard of was Shaka Zulu, you know, and just, you know, about the warriors and all of that. And Nat Turner, you know, Denmark Beeson, Harriet Tubman, you know, moving up to Marcus Garvey and Don Elijah Muhammad and Noble Drew Ali, right? All these people are influencing, and then we come up to the whole Black Panther Party with Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, Fred Hampton, Geronimo Pratt, which is the MOD. You know, Dr. Ben, Dr. John Henry Clark, Conrad George Jackson, which Conrad George Jackson is high on the list because a lot of people, well, where we from anyway, a lot of people don't know about Conrad George Jackson. You know, we, you know, everybody gets, you know, the Huey Newton and the Bobby Seale, you know, the Geronimo Pratts and, you know, the Fred Hamptons. And but like Conrad said, you know, just reading the books, you know, just on George, Conrad George, it just brought a perspective. And what I always take from it is a level of seriousness, you know, to my title, you call it, to my duty, my responsibility, you know. But, you know, and then, you know, and then studying revolutionaries like Conrad Mitchell, Chairman Mao, Fidel Castro, Idi Amin, you know, Patrice Lumumba, you know, so, and then, and this is kind of how we do all these names that we mentioned. This is, a lot of these, well, most of these people are in the 6B program that we mentioned, and what we do is, we make kind of a timeline. We ain't going to Africa too deep. I did mention Shaka Zulu. But we go through a timeline. And what we want to do is get the comrades to understand that you are the next history. You know, we're picking up the torch from these people. You know, put a perspective of, you know, you got a real duty to this work that's been going on for years. You know, hundreds, thousands of years, you know, this war on, you know, this physical, spiritual, and mental war on us, you know, and all of these people, all of these people we named and mentioned, they all the comrades. Like I said, us as a people, we're a cadre, and we're comrades. Once we really, and that's the perspective we want to come from and instill into the members, that all those names we named, all the way up to present, we're the next ones, you know, with the New African and the Republic of New Africa and PPI and all of these other organizations that I ain't going to try to start mentioning everybody, but everybody play their part, everybody do their thing, and it's about understanding, taking all of these names that we just mentioned and understanding, using all the information that we got from them, like you mentioned the Wall Street and, you know, all the assassinations that we've had, you know, the question has to be put to the floor for it. What do we do, right? You know, what do you, how do you prevent all of that? You know, and it's a long conversation of how you just get there, because it starts with just being able to organize yourself or protect your house, right? And now, can you protect your neighbor's house? Can y'all protect the community? Right. Okay. If the city go down, can y'all get water to everybody in the city? Okay. If the state got a problem, can we? Right. And that's picking up the torch from all these names. And one day, you know, the George Jackson Radio, all of the names are gonna be on this same list we're talking about. So that's the perspective I want to come from with, though.
True indeed. I appreciate that, man. At this time, open the line up for a couple of callers. I have a caller right now. I want to ask a question, but open the line up. Hold up. 616-285. You have a question, comment, statement. Do so this time. Your line is open. 614-285. Your line is open. Go ahead.
Bureyadi, free the land. This is Elder Mama Kandi. Greetings to the guests. My first question is, how old are you two brothers and the average age of those in the organization that you're in?
We're both 32, mm-hmm. and the average age of our organization is around 36, I would say, maybe 34 to 36. So, yes, ma'am.
I ask that because I'm an elder, and my oldest son is 57, and my youngest child is 29. And it's from where I sit, it's exciting to hear young people pick up the banner and pick up the, what's that stick that you pass, baton, when you're in a race. It's a feeling I'm going to try to explain, but it's just this wonderful heat around the heart when young people see what it is that we have gone through and that we have been working on maintaining and retaining and moving forward, and y'all come along, pull the baton out of our hands and keep going forward. I can't thank you enough for that behavior. I come from a generation where Queen Mother Moore was literally an extended family mother to me. Y'all speak about John Henry Clark, but he was like a dad to me, you know? And when you get a chance to see what the writings and the videos and the behavior of my generation and the generation before me and a few generations before me, the effect that that has on your generation, I'm sitting here right now with tears in my eyes because y'all get it. Y'all get it. And I'm humbled to have you stand on my shoulders and the shoulders of our ancestors and breathe the air that y'all do and do the work that y'all do. That was an excellent question you asked Brother Bomani when you asked them who influenced them and where did they get certain ideas from, because for me, my main influences were the ancestral spirits who negotiated with me so that I could be reincarnated into this person that I am today, and showing the connection between African transcending cosmogony, us moving in our own spiritual energy that was taken from us and us reclaiming that and making it a part of the whole struggle. You know, you can't be a warrior without invoking a warrior energy, a warrior spirit, whether it's Tigere out of Ghana or Heru Kahuti out of Kemet or Ogun out of Brazil and Haiti and Cuba and Nigeria. It's just really a palpation of the soul and heart to listen to y'all. And I thank you, and be fearless. you know, make your mistakes, analyze them, benefit from them, and then proceed to teach us what to do and what not to do, because there are only two things you can teach, what to do and what not to do. And in both is victory. I salute you both, and I thank you. I yield.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it, Adam McConney. I think we got another person. I want to say something. Let me see. Open your line right quick. Why? You have anything to say? You want to make an announcement? Want to speak? Or you have anything to say?
Hey, right on, Bomani. Peace, everybody.
Peace, Conrad.
Mama Condi and these two brothers. Just want to jump on the call to just say I appreciate the background, the history, the various connections you two have made with your names and your spiritual practices and so on and so forth. I think it's real strong. It's a real strong program tonight in terms of giving that peace out so that we understand certain things in terms of bringing the community together, that we don't all have the same background. We don't all have the same spiritual practices. We don't all have the same level of understanding of political education. But clearly what you described is just exactly what it needs to be. You know, we need to come together with that mixture, but centered around the principles, centered around the goals, you know, that you described in terms of a sovereign nation and bringing together the people in the community to demonstrate that you can own, that you should own, that's the goal, is to have ownership and control of our own resources. So I was kind of, you know, I was just sitting back listening. I'm like, yeah, this is real nice, you know. Bomani has explained over time, you know, some of the things that you've gone through. I know it's taken a while to get ownership of property, which is something that is tangible. People can see, feel, and smell, like Bomani was saying. But that's the goal. That's the goal, is to own, to establish, institutionalize, and build from there, and bring the young people into that kind of organization. Because all this other stuff is just not going to do in terms of just having responses to some of the symptoms of what goes on in our communities. But having institutions that can combat them daily, you know, on a regular basis, through political education, through training, through defense training, through survival training, through, you mentioned earlier, I mean, it was amazing how you were mentioning, you know, just knowing the difference between fire extinguishers. How many people have we lost in fires and floods and so on and so forth? So without beating a dead horse in a sense, you know, because it's been said already, I just want to jump in and say that that's important. And let me hit this piece before I run out of here. What Mama Connie asked you, your ages, that was a strong piece too. And the reason being is because I'm in conversation a lot of times, and sometimes the pushback, the very pushback from the community sometimes is, oh, man, OG, you talking that blah, 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 man. I bet you ain't nobody under 40 in your organization. And they laugh, you know, we get a little kick in the sink. But here you are demonstrating your ages and saying, you just said nobody in your organization is over 40. I'm like, wow. But it's important for these conversations to go on. And I appreciate every damn word y'all spoke. And I'll let it go. I'll yield right there, free the land.
I mean this, sir. I appreciate it, Conrad Freedom.
You know,
one thing we've been discussing about is taking a visit to certain places right now. I was telling the Conrad, you know, you wanted the contacts in D.C. If you come to D.C., you know, you wanted the contacts, you know. But our contacts, we come to D.C. They want the Conrad I was talking about.
Yes, sir. We're going to start traveling. So everybody on the call, if y'all can, reach out to the Conrad Bomani. We're going to start traveling. We want to meet with all the countries, or, you know, all the new African citizens, and see how we can bring our nation together. And it starts by each community setting up different programs and different institutions, and then we start sharing resources.
Right on,
I'm
right on with you. Right with you. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I think that's all the questions, man. What are y'all final thoughts you want to leave it with? You want to leave us some contact information, give me any kind of information to donate or any kind of information, find some resources to find out more about the party? What y'all want to leave with? Give us a final thought.
Okay, I always like to end all our interviews or discussions or meetings with the vision, not division. So it's a slogan that we use. It's THEVISION, division. Not division, D-I-V-I-S. See what I'm saying? So division is we need all the new Africans need to come together so we can have some land of our own, space of our own. That is hard. So we have to unite to fight against all the ills that's waging or against our community. So we have a campaign, a fundraiser going called Unite to Fight. And you can find it on all our social media, all our social media accounts is the People's Party for Independence, Instagram and Facebook. Our Cash App is DTHEPPI15. And what we're doing is we're raising money from each new African that we see. We say, hey, there's 45 million new Africans in America. If we can get a dollar from everybody, we'll have $45 million. If we can just take that program and do it in each community and say, hey, in your community it's 100,000. If we can get a dollar from 100,000 people, we can start to implement programs in the community where we can curb the death, we can curb the poverty, we can curb people not having jobs. You know, we can curb a lot of ills by just uniting to fight. We can eat better, and we can sleep better, we can live better just by donating $1. So everyone that can, if you would, just please donate a dollar to the organization, and that dollar goes towards the institution. That dollar goes towards buying land. That dollar goes towards scholarships that we offer to students to get away from their hometown to see something different. A lot of our students don't even get out of their hometown. They never see the world. So we want to give our children the chance to experience something different. So we're uniting the fight against all the ills. And I'm even reaching out to some of my close friends to see if I can get 200 of them to donate $100. I can get $100 from 200 people. That would be $20,000 that we can donate. I mean, that we can invest right now and do something right now to change our position and condition in society. So I would just thank you all for listening. We're doing the work. We're going to continue to do the work. And any resources that you have to offer us, we're willing to take. Anyone that's willing to work with us, we're willing to work with you to help build our nation, to help build our communities. And thank you all for having us, and we look forward to meeting everybody. Peace and love.
And, like I said, I just want to say, we just want to say thank you to the George Jackson Radio for having us on. We appreciate the platform we get to speak to because it's not a lot that people even want you to speak on. And to the sister and the brother that called in, we appreciate you. Thank you. And sister, it's an honor to pick up the baton and keep running. And we already training our kids to pick it up now and go ahead and run with it. I appreciate all y'all.
Don't die. Yeah, I'm going to thank you. Thank you, brothers, for coming on the platform. I show you now to understand. And thank you for the work you're doing in the past, the present, and the future. You know, and we understand that, you know, the struggle for land and freedom, man. Struggles for freedom and the struggles for land and independence. We know without land, you know what I'm saying, we cannot build anything, man. You know, we cannot be independent. And we know also we're independent. We got to be dependent on each other to be the greatest resource that we have, the human resource. We're the greatest resource, man. We're the greatest form of capital, the human capital. So we want to combine our talents and skills to be a particular nation that we're talking about, right? You know, and all those or anybody lying that's interested in learning more about Georgia University, they can contact me directly. My email, BumaniShakir80@gmail.com, or they contact the Georgia University email at GeorgiaUniversity71@gmail.com. You know, and also you can find them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram from the Georgia University. You know, long live the resistance, long live the African independent movement, and free all our comrades. Where this will go, Salamu. 365 years, days away, days a year. Black August salutation, every day, all day. You know what I'm saying? When we look at the principle of Kwanzaa, we're looking at the principle of resistance. And the whole principle of Kwanzaa also relate to the thing we do every day. Kuchakalia said determination. We'll set determined people. That way we want to build a nation. Peace.